Welcome, chefs, to the World Chocolate Masters Tomorrow podcast. Today promises to be a bright day because we dedicate this entire podcast to color and more specifically, colors in food. More than ever, consumers eat with their eyes and color plays a key role in it. If food looks good, we expect it to taste good and do something good for us. But there's more. As you've undoubtedly experienced yourself, color in food often translates a mood. If we look around us, we notice that the world gradually starts feeling relieved with the new freedom luring behind the clouds after the COVID pandemic. And that freedom evokes feelings of optimism, which in turn triggers consumers to crave food that brightens up our days with color. Because colors influence our mood and make us feel happy. Now there's another story to color in foods as well. With health on their mind, consumers become more conscious about what they eat. And as a consequence, they're also wary about anything artificial. That means that natural colors and flavors are essential to win the consumer's heart. But where do you start? What can colors do in patisserie, desserts, and confectionery? And what can you not do? Let's connect with our host of today, Chef Naomi Weil, living and working in Zurich, Switzerland, to deep dive in a world of color. What chefs think about colors.
Hi and hello everyone from Zurich. I'm Naomi Weil, coincidence or not, here in Switzerland we live close to nature. So, personally, I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with colors in foods. But in my job as a chocolatier and chef, I'm very aware of the impact that color can have. Everyone remembers the time when bonbons and chocolate products looked quite different. 30 years ago, our chocolate world mainly showed brown, beige, and creamy colors. And the new millennium introduced colorful change. When entering a confectionery shop today, the difference couldn't be bigger. We play with colors, prints, and graphics to reveal, for instance, the key flavors of raspberry or lime inside our bonbons. And being creative chefs, we also use colors to explore and express our artistic side. Within that colorful shop universe, we see that there is a call for clarity and clean, natural colors, and healthy foods taking over. Consumers demand pure and safe products, and governments take actions to set the new standards. So, as a chef and chocolatier, what can you do and what should you avoid? Let's hear it from my first guest today. Welcome to Color Authority, Judith Van Vliet.
Thank you, Naomi. How are you today?
Thanks, very well. Yourself?
I'm very good. It's a sunny day here in Milan, in Italy, where I'm podcasting from. So yeah, I'm excited about this talk that we're going to have about color.
I would like to start off with what is Color Authority and what is your job all about? Could you explain that to us?
Well, actually, the Color Authority is the name of my business and it's namesake podcast, where I talk about color on different applications with my guests from all over the world. I'm a color catalyst, so my life is all about color. And I support brands to connect with their customers through the language of color. So I help them to deepen the relation that they have with their end consumers using indeed color. So I help them in development of color trends for specific markets through storytelling and palette development. I work with different cross-industry designers and marketeers, and I support them in selecting the right color for their products according to lifestyle and consumer trends. Beside that, I often speak at international events about color and trends as well. So yeah, I'm what some people call me indeed the color authority. Some people just call me the color girl.
Sounds very cool, quite broad, but deepened into the color universe. So our second guest I would like to welcome is food decorations and color expert within Barry Callebaut. Hello, Astrid.
Hi, Naomi.
Astrid, thanks for being with us today. What's the most frequently asked question about colors these days that lands on your desk?
Well, the most asked questions these days all concern what natural colorants are and what the difference is between non-natural and natural colorants and how we can use them in our products.
Yep, indeed. We'll come back to that later. I've been confronted with that question frequently and numerous times as well.
What do colors do for foods?
First, let's jump into the big questions of today. What do colors do for our foods, and more specifically in the sweet category? Astrid.
We have once a survey that gave us some insights that concluded that up to 85% of what your consumers buy is influenced by color. So it's definitely a big factor in making your product stand out amongst others, definitely in our confectionery brand.
Yeah, I can only agree to that. What Astrid is now saying, I think we both read the same survey, but yes, it's true that the 85% of consumers are influenced highly by color. We are influenced and attracted by certain colors throughout the day at an unconscious level. People very often, they know what their favorite color is, but they don't know how color influences their daily lives. So in the past, indeed, maybe there was little innovation, as you said, Naomi, in coloring food besides using natural colors. Maybe in candy, it was more normal to use, you know, poppy colors. But you see that consumers are adapting color a lot more. That obviously includes chocolate. What you see generally is color attracts the eye, and brighter colors or contrasting colors attract the eye a little bit more than neutrals, such as browns and beige and whites, as you said in your introduction. So playing with color, it really enhances the attractiveness and is a great tool to add freshness and novelty to something that in the end you daily consume, whether it's general food or a sweet, of course.
So Astrid, when we hear that, and also about the brighter colors, like these little inputs, does this correspond to how chefs use colors in foods?
Yeah, it does. We see ourselves that we offer a large amount of different means to add color to products or dishes. They can, for instance, add a print on top of the praline, dust or spray some nice color on top of their product, or just add some sprinkles that have a nice shimmer. So there's a very large choice that chefs have nowadays that they can do to add some color to their product and to make them stand out. And often it's not that they need a lot of color. Sometimes just a little hint of color is enough to really boost a product that way. So it's definitely something we also see.
So Judith, now, if we look at colors from a broader perspective, can I say that colors do have a meaning and determine our moods? And can we even go so far as to say that they influence our buying decisions?
Yes, they do influence our buying decisions. So, for example, as Astrid mentioned, 85% in research shows that people are heavily influenced by the choice of color. But you actually have 93% of consumers that report that they focus highly on visual appearances when buying a product. So visual appearances, obviously, is both shape and color. But yes, color most definitely determines our mood as they influence our buying decisions throughout the entire day. The first information, interestingly, that arrives to our human brain is smell. Of course, if you're buying things online, you don't have smell. But in your shops, you may have smell. So that's the first information that arrives to our senses. The second is shape and form. But shape and form is always connected with color because different shapes and forms are perceived differently when you use different types of color. So that's why color is the perfect tool to change. And in the food industry, you guys are lucky because you can change color a lot quicker than, let's say, somebody who's obviously developing shampoo bottles. Generally, and I say generally, in color psychology, you don't know for 100% how people are going to react to color, to a specific color, and also to different times in the day, because we grow up in a certain environment and you are culturally influenced by the colors you grew up with. But let's say that generally the yellows, the oranges are uplifting, they give you energy, they're creative, they're optimistic. And then together with the reds that are often colors associated with foods, people that are surrounded by these warmer colors tend to be eating a little bit more, or because they tend to be comfortable in those warm colors. So let's say that if you're eating chocolate off a brown plate and you don't want to gain a lot of weight, that's not a good idea because you tend to eat more of it. So it's funny how color influence is not just only how we feel, how we generally have our emotions and how they tap into emotions, but apparently also in what we buy and how much and what we eat when we are, you know, surrounded by certain colors.
I would like to go further into something you just said. Is our response to colors different throughout the day? So do we respond differently in the morning, for instance, or like better to specific colors compared to in the afternoon or evening?
I do think we reply differently to colors throughout the day. So for example, in the morning, you're looking for energy, you're looking to wake up, maybe again in the late afternoon, but in the evening, definitely you're trying to maybe relax and to quiet down, especially your busy mind after a busy day. Then there's another aspect that depending where you are in the world, and I think we all know this, that breakfast in the north of Europe is more likely to be savory. And in the south of Europe, where I live, it's often sweets. So people eat croissants, for example. So depending where you are in the world, your preference for food and color changes culturally. But brighter colors, yes, they pick up your mood. They generate energy, especially when we talk about yellow again and orange. So yellow in the morning, for example, it can induce alertness and it's linked to the left part of our brain. So it's like the powerhouse of thinking. It's the color associated with joy, energy, and indeed intellect. So it's a smart color for your morning chocolate indulgence. Red, on the other hand, attracts attention. I think we all know that, how it's also used in traffic. But it also enhances our metabolism. So it increases also your respiration rate. It raises your blood pressure. So depending how you're feeling and what type of sweet you're looking for, what type of activity you're looking for, you need to tap into that with your consumer. So it could be that for an energy bar, red is a great combination. Greens have the opposite effect. They generate calmness. They decrease the human metabolism. Definitely a color that also recalls products that are beneficial for the body and the mind. So maybe those are colors that you'd expect a little bit more towards the later part in the day. Funny enough is that pink, by the way, is a color that, although we seem to think that pink is obviously associated with many things in life, but it's one of a color that actually calms a lot. So although we tend to think green and blue is calm, it's true, but so does pink. And pink generally is a color that I see is very often used in the sweet and also in the chocolate industry.
Tomorrow's colors, what's trending?
We all know about trends of colors within the fashion industry, but is there also a trend in the food colors? Will we see a new upcoming color palette in all high-end pastry shops, for instance, in a few months from here or within a year? Can we predict that already a little bit?
I already forecasted 2022, and I'm now currently, actually today, later in the afternoon, I'm going to be forecasting 2023 with a group of fellow designers globally. But what we see in high-end pastry shops here in Italy, for example, but in Europe in general, are two different stories. I see the use of pastels, as well as in packaging for the products, as the product itself. And the pastels I'm seeing are the softer pinks, yellows, and mints. Then I see stronger colors that are, for example, used here in Milan at pastry shops like Marchesi, Cova, Serge, Bonilla, who are using the mango yellow and the coral pink. Marchesi, interestingly, I saw is also using silver and gold to their smaller switch, and then they combine that with brighter pinks. It tends to be a good color combo. But generally in Europe, we see an uptick of the greens, pistachio green, but also the stronger, almost, let's say, artificial pea green. But as accent, as Astrid said in the beginning, color very often is used as an accent. Generally, what I foresee is for the next months and for the next years, the pastels to actually become a little bit more neutral, so to desaturate a little bit, to become a bit softer. And we see that there is a big influence of the yellow color family, not just yellow per se, but so yellowish greens, yellowish blues, yellowish reds, so colors that are warmer, because we see those as influences of hope and optimism. We are living in this world of duality. We see that a lot of stuff is happening. So you see a lot of more of these contrasting colors and the play with different textures and different shapes. As we move into 2023, we're going to be seeing a lot more red colors, a lot of oranges and a lot of reds. And they're they're contrasting with the re-entry of the blues. But that's more in the global general color market.
Astrid, can you already see an increase in demand and the colors Judith just described, these warmer colors into the yellows? Can you see an increase in the colors?
Well, yellows and reds have always been one of the most popular colors we have, so that's definitely true for our case. But we also see a rise in demands for colors from natural origin, which will give the product a nice pastel color, like Judith also mentioned. So not the vibrant, flashy colors anymore, really more natural looking colors. And also, like Judith mentions, gold is also very popular still.
Very interesting. Now, what's the rationale behind those colors becoming trending? Are we growing into waves or collective moods, or is there a big marketing machine behind it that almost programs colors to become fashionable?
Yeah, I know a lot of people think this. So let me just kill the myth that there's a few of us in the world that dictate the color of the future, as that certainly is not the case. Yes, we are a small group of people that work in the world of color forecasting, yet we're not this elite group that pushes trends or colors. Color forecasting, just to explain a little bit to the audience what color forecasting or any type of forecasting is about, is that you listen carefully by observing the market and its consumers. So we look at people's behavior, their needs and values, and how these needs and values are changing according to external influences that impact our daily lives, such as politics, the economy, climate change. Those are just a few examples. This is then translated into a narrative, a story, a trend that can be applied to different products. One of them is color. So color is just one application. What we see is, yes, there is a greater collective, but there's also a greater divide. There's a lot of duality, and this is due to the different levels of suffering throughout the crisis and tons of emotions that we can see and hear on social media. We observe them in today's society worldwide, the conspiracy theories to get vaccinated, to not get vaccinated, masks, no masks. There's a lot happening currently in this world, and this is not upsetting necessarily people, but you see that the divide in opinions is broader. This duality, you can always track that back to every market, so also within the pastry industry. On one hand, we see the natural movement, as Astrid indeed mentioned, with health-based ingredients that respect natural colorings, enhancing the health and well-being movement that we've seen in the past couple of years, but it's really been accelerated by COVID-19. I think we all saw last year the baking and the sweet industry that saw a huge increase in interest during the lockdown, as people really needed to get the daily treats and indulgence, but they also wanted to get creative at the same time, kill time. You know, they were a little bit bored. Now that we're slowly going out and about again, I foresee people to get back to a healthier lifestyle. So maybe less sugar, less moments of indulgence in the sweet category. A bunch of new startups are doing some interesting stuff. They're finding new alternatives to match the taste and functionality of standard sugar, using the latest science and technology. Because there's a big sugar addiction in society. And I know indeed that Barry Callebaut really is working on that a lot as well. And I saw, for example, Fooditif, one of these startups from the Netherlands, that launched an all-natural sweetener in January 2020. So they are literally using the sweetener from non-organic third-grade apples and pears, which normally would get thrown out. So this is an interesting trends that we are seeing. It's interesting that the farm to table is still here. The using local products is still very, very important. And this has been accelerated again by everything that's happening. But interestingly, the food as medicine movement is continuing. So it is food needs to benefit our current lifestyles and also our physiological and mental health. So there's a lot of mindful eating to elevate our mood. And this really represents our need to self-care. Instagrammability is important. So in the baking trend, for people that are baking at home and they're making their own chocolates and pastries, you see that they're using more brighter colors. This is highly influenced through Instagram, TikTok, Instagram, social media, because obviously colors pop a little bit more. So you will see that everybody who is using that type of baking for Instagram, they use a little bit more color. But I do think that online shopping is going to continue. So online food indulgence is going to be key. And here you do see a little bit more brighter colors than maybe directly in the shop. So I think making your product look attractive is something that definitely is going to continue.
We definitely see and feel the trend here as well to change everything to more natural, because people nowadays, as Judith said, find natural and healthy products very important. So we don't see this trend disappearing anytime soon, and we don't definitely see it reversing to more synthetic.
Before we go into the nature of colors, I have two more questions for you, both of you. So the first question is, can we see a difference between like buzzing cities or the more rural areas, or within the, on the globe, can we see differences on a global scale where we say, okay, Asia tends to go more into this direction, Europe is feeling comfortable around those colors? Can we tell a clear difference when it comes to our food, to our consumption? Yeah.
But I definitely noticed that it's mostly Europe that is going more to natural and more to pastel, while the rest of the world still works quite often with synthetic colors and doesn't see the bad thing of using synthetic colors. So that's definitely something we notice.
I can only amend that. I can only agree with that. What I see in Europe is definitely Europe is toning down the color, so softer. Often even colors that are not highly saturated, but even a little bit dirty. So that means they add like a notch of black into the color, so it's less bright. Where I see in Asia, there is still a lot of color use. There is possibly a lot of artificial coloring going on. Japan, for example, is very colorful in its pastry shops. And I just came back from Mexico. And when you are in Mexico, I can tell you, health is a topic, but when you look into chocolate and pastry generally, there's a lot of coloring going on, and this is obviously culturally based, because Mexico and Latin America generally, they tend to use a lot more color than we do in Europe. So I do see that there is differences among the world.
To my final question, it's a bit of a discussion point we always have it as chefs, and are there colors that don't absolutely work? So I'm still like from the old school now, where we say don't touch blue when it comes to food. I'm working with a lot of chefs that say don't ever work with blue. That's not a color we eat, Naomi. Are there colors that we really shouldn't associate or we can't associate with edibles?
I think a lot has changed. I do think that generally colors that do not reflect light very well, so black and yes, blues, they are a little bit difficult for different types of food. Warmer colors obviously are more associated with sweet and food, and it tends to also make food look more attractive. Hence the use of red lights in the butcher shop and blue light on fish. Light generally is hugely important when you work with food and also with color. Years back, I remember there was a health product that was going to boost your immune system when you were working out by an Italian brand, and they used black with a pink accent. It literally sat in a supermarket eating dust, and it was quickly removed by the brand. Now what we see is that black, for example, is used more for luxury brands and exclusive types of foods, such as high-end Parmesan cheese, for example, in the packaging, obviously not the cheese. Blue, however, I've seen that there's a rise on Instagram used on foods, as it apparently visually is appealing. And it was also a color that back in 2019 and 2020 was forecasted. So it takes a little bit of time for that blue then to enter the food industry. But again, I do think there's a difference between digital appeal of color in food and then what people really buy when they come to the shop. And that's the same with paint. And I know we're not talking about paint here, but people will see a beautiful color on a wall in a picture in a magazine. They'll come to the shop and they'll buy white. But they're influenced by that orange or by that blue that they saw on the wall. So I think that's a little bit where we are with blues and black colors within the food industry.
Deep dive in the nature of colors.
So now, when we speak about the nature of colors in food, a lot of it is being debated, even contested, especially when we look at metallic colors or artificial colors. Judith, what are the big movements or big trends when it comes to clean or healthy choices?
Balance. I think balance has been the biggest lesson out of last year and out of this year. And I think we're going to see that through the next years, not just next year, next years. healthy food intake is, it needs to be balanced with our daily indulgence intake. So let's say our sugar intake. And diets are going to reflect that. They're going to reflect more how we feel and how we want to feel. So the relationship between food and mental health is increasingly understood. And new studies are also finding links between our emotions and what we eat. So for example, foods that can reduce your anxiety are key in this period. Food that helps you with insomnia, or the foods that can help you with feelings of depression. Because since the outbreak, consumers are looking more and more for medical, herbal, and plant-based ingredients that indeed boost especially your immunity. So to have a more holistic look at what we indulge will remain long past this pandemic. For that reason, when you look at metallic colors, generally they do not inspire you as particularly healthy. They tend to look artificial on food. I mean, they look fun. They look exciting, they may look very cool, but I would say that if pastry chefs are going to be using those colors, use them in accents, but also they need to have a clear new branding message that is accompanied to this new consumer movement in healthy food. It's an interesting fact, however, that we do see the increase of silver and copper currently in other markets, especially interior design market, due to their bacteria cleaning properties. This obviously is not directly influencing your chocolate if it has a copper covering, obviously, but it may influence your shop design or your counter design because of these materials being used. Most important, I still think that how people feel and how we can tap into different moments in the day without judging them for eating overly healthy or judging them for making them feel guilty about what they're doing, what they're eating. But just literally, how do you want to feel? Okay, here's your snack. This is what we can offer to you at different moments of the day for what you need. I think that's more like it. But when we talk about metallics and artificial coloring, it needs to be accompanied with a clear message. Transparency is key in current times. People want to know what's in the product, what they're eating, and what the effects of that are going to be.
Astrid, is this something that aligns with the demands that we get from chefs and artisans these days?
Yeah, it does. We see that even when more and more customers demand for natural or as natural as possible colors, they still also quite often ask for metallic colors. So they're still quite popular, even though the trend goes to more natural. So that's also why we still offer them both, because we see that the demand for both is still quite big.
I would like to deep dive a little bit more into the difference between artificial and natural colors, and also if that's the same as azo and non-azo colors. Could you explain a little bit, Astrid?
Sure. So first of all, colorants that can be used in food can be subdivided into two main categories. So we have food colorants and coloring food. The difference between the two is that coloring foods are seen as ingredients and therefore they have no E number. So this is because they are derived from a natural product and that product has not been chemically or physically modified. So they can be used, they use the product as it is found in nature and they use it as a whole. So for instance, red beet. Were you to dry the red beet and refine it into a powder and use that powder to color your product, then the red beet will need to be listed as an ingredient and is E-number free. So coloring foods can therefore be claimed as from natural origin. So this is already one part of so-called natural colorants. The second category are the food colorants, and these are additives, and therefore they have an E number. So, but they can also be subdivided into two other categories. We have synthetic food colorants, which are, as the name suggests, synthetically made. And we have food colorants from natural origin as well. So the food colorants from natural origin are also derived from a natural source, but this source has been chemically or physically modified. So when we have the same red beet, but we would extract the pigment that gives the red beet its color and use that pigment to color our products, then the red beet will need to be labeled as an additive with an E number, in this case E162, and will need to be referred to as red beet extracts to really emphasize the difference with the red beet as an ingredient. But just as the coloring foods, these E-numbers that are derived from a natural source can also be claimed as from natural origin. So from natural origin does not equal E-number free. From natural origin can either be E-number free ingredients or additives with an E-number. When we look at azo, non-azo, this is situated completely in the food colorants, so with E-numbers. Before, I subdivided the food colorants into synthetic and from natural origin. But besides this classification, you can also use ASO, non-ASO, and the two classifications have nothing to do with each other. So ASO implies that the product has an ASO bond, which is a double nitrogen bond, so based on the chemical composition of the colorant. This bond gives the colorant a very vivid color that's very stable. And this ASO bond does not occur in nature, so all ASO colorants are synthetic food colorants. The non-ASO food colorants don't have this double nitrogen bond, but that does not mean that they are not synthetic, so the non-ASO colorants can either be synthetic or from natural origin. But as mentioned before, as ASO is synthetic, it does not occur naturally. That means that all from natural origin colorants, so with an E number, are automatically non-ASO. So it's not so that you can link ASO to synthetic and non-ASO to from natural origin. Non-ASO really has an overlap between natural and synthetic.
Very often we have chefs and we're confronted with this, with producing these beautiful creations and these bonbons, and we're using either of these free non-ASO possibilities that are available to us, so of natural source or non-ASO, but the longevity of the color is not there. So we have these beautiful creations, and about 2-3 weeks after we created them, the color starts fading. So is there a way for us as chefs to have something with a longer shelf life but not go for ASO colors?
Yeah, that's really the difficulty with non-ASO from natural origin colors then, because they are derived from a natural source and the chemical processes they can do on that source are very limited, or otherwise they would be seen as synthetic. So that's why you really stay with the sensitivity of the natural product, and that's mostly in light, that it's very sensitive to light. So that's something that's really common for natural colorants, and that's not something you can change. If you really want to eliminate that, then you would have to go to synthetic. So that's really, yeah, the negative side of the natural colorants. They really have the sensitivities that you can't eliminate from them.
Personally, I think it aligns a little bit with the freshness of products. This is something I've realized, that a lot of chefs find a way around it by just producing smaller batches and offering them fresher. But I think there is definitely a shift going on in the way we're producing with the colors, and not just the colors that we use, but how we produce, the quantities, the production cycle, and also then our selling points, how we sell it as a daily praline, as a fresh praline, things like that.
What natural colors can and cannot do.
My next question is, do natural colors come in equally wide variation as the traditional or artificial colorings? Do we have the same palette to play around with?
Well, as I said, food colorants from natural origin are made by extracting a pigment from a natural source. So that means that the colors we can have are really limited to the colors we can find in nature. So you can find practically every basic color in nature, like yellows, reds, blues, but there will always be a specific type of yellow or a specific type of blue. It's not that you can order a very specific color from natural origin. It can also, again, vary on the batch of the natural colorant. So one harvest of red beets will, for instance, be more red than the batch that will come after that. So that's also something that we really need to be taken into account when working with natural colors. Color is not always stable.
So now if we look a little bit closer to natural colorings, again, leaving out the fact of the longevity of the color, is there other things that chefs need to keep in mind? Can we work with these colors just the same way? Do they behave the same when we dissolve them in cocoa butter? Or are there some little things that we need to keep in mind when we work with natural colors?
They can definitely be used in the same applications, but they, as I said, they will always be less vibrant or less fleshy than the synthetic ones. You can have very vibrant natural colorants, but the synthetic ones will always go a bit further. As said, they are less stable in light, the natural ones. For instance, when we go to solubility, it will differ per colorant because every colorant comes from a different natural source. So for instance, when we have curcumin, which is a yellow natural colorant, that's fat-soluble pigment. But then we have anthocyanin, which is a red colorant, that's water-soluble. So the solubility really depends on the natural source where the color comes from.
So you can certainly see a trend in the do-it-yourself kind of color making, where people are going back to natural products, natural sources, such as, for example, beetroot, turmeric, and start making their own colors.
Yeah, and the perfect imperfect. It doesn't have to look perfect. And I know that's extremely difficult for people who work in creative fields, such as myself as a color designer, but also pastry chefs, because you want it to look perfect. But the perfect imperfect is something that consumers are more and more accepting. And they're seeing it almost like a personalization of their product, their pastry that looks different than the pastries of other people that are buying the same stuff in the same shop.
Me as a chef, or any chef, can we use our own natural ingredients? How do I start playing around? So for example, if I take turmeric, beetroot, or spices, and I start making my own fresh natural colors, as you've just mentioned, there are some limitations. How can chefs navigate it around it? Is it basically a trial and fail kind of scenario?
Yeah, I definitely think it's something that needs to be tested, because as said, they are much more sensitive than natural colorants, specifically sensitive to heat as well. So for instance, if you would use a natural colorant in a bakery application, it's something that really needs to be tested in that application, because it really depends on the time it's exposed to heat and the heat itself, the temperature. So I would always suggest to really test the ingredient in your final application to know for sure if it will work or not.
And Judith, just connecting to what Astrid mentioned, can you see on a global scale some limitations from chefs, companies within the food industry? And can you maybe explain us, if you see them, how do they counteract against those limitations?
Yes, I think that, again, brings back to the story on depending where you are in the world. Obviously, you have different natural ingredients available. Certain ingredients or natural colorings are not available, for example, in Asia, whereas, yes, they are available, for example, in Latin America or in Europe. So because of the trend of using local ingredients, that obviously influences directly what you can and what you cannot use, if this is something that indeed pastry chefs are tapping into. I do see this trend. I see this trend not only in the food industry, I see this happening generally in interior design a lot. But what I find interesting is that a lot of people have stopped to control color. They have stopped to control the color, as in, let's say you had a customer that came in and they wanted this and this color matched, for example, on their application, whether that was food, whether that was any type of product. They almost had like a 99% certainty that that color was going to look exactly as, for example, the image or the reference that they were referring to, whether this is a Pantone or whatever type of color. Now what you're starting to see is that we are letting go of that control. So colors that are fading with time, let's call them seasonal colors. And I don't mean seasonal as in fashion or interior design, that every season have new colors. I mean seasonal as that colors that flow with the current of life. And I think a lot of people are flowing a lot more. People are letting go of control, because I think last year we clearly saw we don't have control. We have control over our own personal surroundings, not beyond that. So you see that not only then in other industries, I see that now happening in the food industry for that same reason. So the driver is the same. It's the letting go of control and to accept how natural colors come about, whether this is indeed in interior with natural dyeing. You see a lot of, for example, beetroot and turmeric, as Astrid mentioned, that is being used to color food. It is actually also now used to color, again, textiles, for example. So this is an interesting trend that I see, especially in Europe. I have to be honest, it's mainly Europe. I think Europe in this is the trendsetter. And then slowly, I do foresee that this is going to influence other parts and other regions in the world as well. I do foresee that this probably happens first in Latin America, Central America, possibly North America, and only then to move towards to Asia and Asia Pacific.
I would like to deep dive a little bit into the health aspects of colors, because we hear every now and then, very frequently we hear of the health aspects, health benefits or damaging impact of colors upon our health. So Astrid, can you help explain a little bit, are there benefits of plant-based or natural colors? Where is the damage started? Where is the benefits?
First of all colorants that have an E number, so all the additives basically, they have all been tested very thoroughly. So they have a set limit on how much you can use in every type of application, whether it's ice cream or confectionery. So these limits that have been set in the legislation are set in a very low level, much lower than would become unsafe, so to speak. So they are definitely not dangerous to use. Most colorants from natural origin with an e-number then also received a quantum status label in the European legislation, which means basically that you can use them as much as you need. So they are in no level ever dangerous to use. The azo colorants that I explained before, these have a very strict limit, much lower than the from natural origin ones. So it's, if you want to look at it that way, it's better than to use the from natural origin colorants because they have no limit basically. But it's never unsafe. It's never unsafe to use additives in your products. Are they healthier? I don't think adding colorants to a product can make the product healthier. I think there are other types of ingredients you can add to do that.
And when it comes to dosage, you've just mentioned that basically with natural colors, I can use as much as I want. Is there a sort of a guideline or like a recommendation from your side that you can share with us, with contestants and the chefs, where you say, well, that's how I would start and where I would start testing?
Yeah, it definitely depends on the type of application you use. Every application has a different amount of colorant you will need to add to really give the color that you want. But I would definitely recommend to start in a low dosage and just up the dosage until you find a color that you find good, because mostly the from natural origin colorants, as said, they will give a very pastel-like color. So it really depends on what you want to achieve as color, how much you will need to add.
Color around the world. How does legislation and labeling work?
Okay, Astrid, for chefs who export or sell their products overseas, what's the current situation? Is legislation related to food colorings the same around the world, or are there remarkable differences from region to region?
Well, first of all, in Europe, we have one legislation that counts for all European countries. There's only one exception from nowadays, and that's in France. You have a ban on titanium dioxide, so that's E171, the white colorant that has a lot of been in the news lately, because Europe is now looking into banning it as well. But at this moment, in all European countries, you can still use this colorant except for France. So that's the only exception nowadays in Europe. But then all countries outside of Europe basically all have their own legislation. They have colorants that cannot be used that we in Europe can use, for instance. So it really depends per country and per colorant, and also per application, because the legislation for colorants that can be used in confectionery, for instance, are not the same as ones you can use in ice cream. So it really needs to be looked into application, the colorant, and the country.
So Astrid, let's say I would like to start shipping things from within Switzerland across the globe, let's say to the US or Canada or to Asia. Are there some things that I really should absolutely stay away from because I know they will give me a headache? Or are there some products where they will just be easy to export across globally? As a chef, how do I start? How do I navigate around those guidelines?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's not one specific rule or guideline I can give in this case, because as I said, every country really has its own legislation, and it's not so that you can say all coloring foods are good around the globe. For instance, in the US, safflower, which is a coloring food, has no E-number, is very positively reviewed in Europe. It's not allowed to import it to the US. Other countries have other colorants they do not import, so you cannot ship it to those countries. So it's really important if you send outside of Europe then, for instance, that you really check the legislation of that country to see if there are any colorants that are not allowed at all, because then I think you can come into problems at the customs.
Judith, do you see across the globe, for those reasons, a different range of products that's offered? Do you see chefs finding a way around it? What is your experience with that, with those challenges that chefs are facing?
I think generally what we're seeing is that people are more buying in their local communities. So I think for that reason, there is a lot of people that would buy mainly their products at their local pastry shop, for example. And that's not just in pastry shops, that's generally in the food industry is an important trend. Now, buying local is not new. What we do see is that is remodeled again to something that has become really part of our daily lives. We have seen shops around in our streets, in our local community suffer throughout the past crisis. And you see that the locals are really trying to help more them than actually the let's say the multinationals or like the bigger supermarket chains. So I do see that I understand the difficulties indeed for shipping and indeed to get your products across the world to other parts of the world. But I do think at this current time, with the clear brand message that you can give as a pastry chef, is that you are doing this for your local community. Because the trend of empathy, kindness, the trend of helping out your local community and being an active member of your society, of your local society, is very key. So I understand the difficulties, but I think that if you swap around those difficulties from a different point of view, you can actually tap into something that currently is key to consumers, which is buying local. So I think it's not a big solution to the issues that we're seeing, but I do think it is, at this moment, is important trend to tap into so that you use local ingredients, local natural colorings, for example, because that's what people are looking for.
So this brings us to the end of our podcast. Astrid and Judith, thank you very much for sharing your brightening ideas and views on colorants. Is there a final message or advice that you have for our contestants in the World Chocolate Masters?
Thank you, Naomi, for this very interesting chat we had. And I'm looking forward to see how the contestants will use color in their products. So I think as tip I can give that a very nice touch, subtle touch of color really can make your product stand out.
Yes, just as a final note from my side, I do think that color changes our daily lives. And I know color trends are highly important. And I'm going to say something that maybe is not very common for somebody working in my field. But in the end, use your intuition. Use that feeling, that the feeling that you have in your stomach, that you have in your tummy when you're working, when you're in your creative mood, because that actually speaks a lot more to your product and to whatever you're going to be creating in this contest than possibly the color trends in general. You still always have to apply it. And you as a pastry chef, you're the best one to do so for your own product. So good luck, everyone.
Great. Thank you. So for today's podcast, my key takeaways are that colors influence our behaviors, they influence our way of purchasing. And as a chef, you can therefore utilize the powerful impact to make your product more appealing to your customer. Also change the product they buy throughout the day so you can put a certain attention towards the product at a different time of day. The second point, which definitely was very insightful, is that natural colors are the way to go. Customers are okay with the imperfect perfections of that product that comes with it from using natural products, natural colorants. They still like the colorful range of products, but more importantly, our local, natural and healthy products. And last but not least, I've learned that there are quite some differences on a global scale. But this can really be utilized by chefs by telling a story, using those colors, those cultures to tell a story and therefore sell the product with a different point of view.
That was it for today. In our next podcast, we will speak about creating patisserie with nutritious and functional properties. Pastries that not only taste good, but definitely also do good and make you feel good. Our central host will be Cacao Barry's creative director, Ramon Morato. So great things coming up. Let's definitely reconnect in our next World Chocolate Master Tomorrow podcast about nutritious pastries. But for now, stay safe and stay creative.